We're talking with political commentator and Wisconsin's own Charlie Sykes here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. 8 weeks out from the November election, and, you know, partisan politics is part and parcel with the COVID-19 pandemic. Labor Day marks the traditional start of the campaign season. Yesterday, we saw both Vice President Mike Pence and Democratic Vice President nominee Senator Kamala Harris both made appearances in our battleground state, La Crosse and Milwaukee, respectively. Neither campaign is ignoring Wisconsin this time. How has President Trump changed the GOP? What do you think the Republican Party will look like after November? We're at 800-642-1234. Charlie Sykes is a former conservative radio talk show host on WTMJ in Milwaukee. He's the founder and the editor-at-large of the conservative political news site, The Bulwark. Charlie Sykes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, for decades, you were one of the most influential conservative voices here. Now you're one of the Republican Party's and President Trump's fiercest critics. What troubles you about President Trump and the GOP right now?
Well, how much time do we have? What I think troubles me the most is Donald Trump, the man, who back in 2016 I described as a serial liar, a con man, a narcissist, someone with the emotional maturity of a 9-year-old who wanted access to the nuclear codes. But let's set that aside for a moment, because Donald Trump has proven to be exactly who he is. What has been more troubling has been watching a Republican Party that has decided that it is more interested in being a cult of personality than it is being a movement based on ideas. One principle after another, whether you want to talk about fiscal prudence, whether free trade, American exceptionalism, one after another, those values were jettisoned. Not to mention just the damage that's been done to the culture, the American political culture, by 4 years of Donald Trump.
I want to take us to Kenosha here and the protests against police brutality. And you've been talking about this in your podcast. You have said that we're in this cultural hot civil war. We're on dystopian fast forward. Can you explain what you're talking about?
Well, I think I probably said that a couple of weeks ago. The dystopian fast forward was not only are we divided as a country into political tribes, but it appears to be increasingly violent, and the possibility that this could be a hot war. The fact after what happened in Kenosha with the president, who is rather than pouring the balm of calm over the situation, seems to be encouraging his supporters to go into places like Portland, Oregon, and has been defending the vigilante, the young man down in Kenosha. This strikes me as a very, very dangerous moment that America is a tinderbox. And that rather than calming the situation, we're going into the next 8 weeks in which I just have the sense that the worst is yet to come in terms of partisan rhetoric, in terms of the vilification of one another. And this could be a very dangerous moment for America.
Do you imagine there could be escalation? And how are the Republican Party and Democratic politicians handling this moment in terms of voters as well?
Well, when this first happened, I thought this was going to be a real problem for the Democrats. And by the way, it may still be that the president had seized upon this urban violence and said, look, this is intolerable. I alone stand between chaos and law and order. And I wasn't certain that this wouldn't work. It has worked in the past. It's worked in Wisconsin in the past. It's worked nationally in 1968, 1972 with Richard Nixon. But I have to say, I think the situation is very fluid. And I think that after the shooting in Kenosha by the 17-year-old young man, Kyle Rittenhouse, and the president's defense of him, I think the dynamic might have changed a little bit, because the one thing that voters do not want is a president who is stoking the fire. And I think that so far, Joe Biden, particularly that speech that he gave last week, hit most of the right notes. I think that that Biden actually found himself in a place where most Americans are, which is that you can You can be appalled by the instance of police violence that we saw down in Kenosha, support the peaceful demonstrations, but then strongly denounce the rioting, the burning, and the violence. And I think that he did that. And Trump, in contrast, looks like he simply wants to exploit it. And I think you're seeing this in the national polls and the Wisconsin polls. And I want to emphasize so far, it might change if violence continues around the country. But so far, this doesn't seem to be resonating with voters. It doesn't seem to be moving the fundamentals of this race. Now, it will appeal to Donald Trump's base, but I don't think his base right now is large enough to win this election. So at the moment, my sense is that this is a failing political tactic.
Do you view that? Do you view that Wisconsin is a type of microcosm, if you will, for national political debates now?
Absolutely. I think that we are very much a microcosm. I think that our demographics match that of the other states that will make a difference. And by that, I mean the upper Midwestern states, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Minnesota, all of those states, possibly Ohio. We're a much whiter electorate than the nation as a whole. We have a much higher portion of our electorate that is non-college educated, white voters, which tends to be Trump friendly. But having said that, I think that the breakdown between urban, rural, and suburban votes mirrors exactly what you're seeing in a lot of other states. And I think that will be the story of the 2020 election.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Charlie Sykes. He's founder and editor at large of The Bulwark. He's also a former conservative talk show host. We're talking with him about the conservative movement in America ahead of November, what he sees now with the GOP. Taking your questions, your insights, how do you think that President Trump has changed the Republican Party? What do you think the GOP will look like after November? Join in at 800-642-1234. Charlie, let's talk about the national conventions. What did you see as the strategy of the Republican Party in its national convention last month?
Well, I think it was mainly designed to bring back wobbly Republican voters. I think they were aiming at suburban voters, suburban women voters, trying to convince them that perhaps they were a kinder and gentler party. But I think the message was very, very much mixed. I think that they were trying to shore up their base while bringing back Republicans who might have been disillusioned.
Are there any undecided voters out there?
That is an excellent question. And I will tell you that I've debated this back and forth on both sides of this. I honestly don't know. I think there are some voters who might be on the bubble, but it's a very, very small number. But that doesn't mean it's not significant, because this election might be decided by a small number of voters. But I do understand. I was actually on a television show the other day where somebody was making the point there are no persuadable voters, that the entire campaign is simply about motivation and turnout. And I pushed back on him, but I'm not sure that he's wrong.
We're talking with political commentator Charlie Sykes, who stays with us. His most recent book is called How the Right Lost Its Mind. We're exploring the Republican Party in these times. What comes next? Are you a conservative who supports President Trump? Tell us what you like about him and the effect he's had on the party. Are you a conservative who is opposed to President Trump? Will you vote for Joe Biden in November? And if so, why? Join in with your perspective. It's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Charlie Sykes right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking with longtime conservative talk show host Charlie Sykes about the future of the GOP and the Republican election strategy. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Are never Trumpers becoming never Republicans? Will party allegiance kick in on election day? As we've been talking about, are there really any undecided voters out there? These are questions that Charlie Sykes has explored in recent times. Conservatives, how will you vote in November? It's 800-642-1234. And Charlie Sykes is our guide to the conservative movement and the GOP. He stays with us. Let's take a call now. Peter is with us in Reedsburg. Hi, Peter.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have some concerns about Trump. He should do more. I heard the speaker just say that, you know, Trump and the speech by Biden was saying that they could, that Biden's speech was saying he was really trying to calm the violence. I totally disagree with that. Speaker of the House had a chance to calm this down, and she said, people do what people do. How stupid is that? And then you got Biden not condemning. He's saying peaceful violence, but this is happening in Democratic-controlled governor states and Democratic city mayors, and this is where it's happening, and yet it's not happening in the Republic's thing. It's happening in the Democratics. So to push this thing and make it sound like it's all Trump's fault is, but Trump should do more.
Peter, let's have Charlie Sykes respond to your insights. Charlie, go ahead.
Well, that of course is the Trump talking point, that this is Democratic states, Democratic cities. But the question is, what leadership is the president providing? I'm not sure what the caller was referring to. Nancy Pelosi's not running for president. The Joe Biden speech was, look, I admitted on my podcast that I didn't want to actually say anything really great about Joe Biden, but that was a really good speech. It was a crafted speech. It was a well-crafted speech. It was a very thoughtful speech. And I would urge people to read it as opposed to reading what your friend's Facebook posts say about it. But the fact is that we're all Americans, and there was a time when we expected that the president would represent all Americans. And this whole notion of that we divide the country into red and blue, and that there's a real America, and then there's these Democratic, cities where these terrible things are happening. Look, this is an American problem, and I do think that this is a moment again where we should dial down the rhetoric as opposed to raise the rhetoric up.
You mentioned earlier wobbly Republicans, using the word wobbly there. How much of an issue is allegiance in the GOP now?
Well, it's huge. I think that right now party loyalty has become one of the dominant drivers of American politics. And by that, I mean also the negative partisanship, that people are motivated to vote against the other party and how strong that is. And so you'll see this, that virtually every conversation is going to be dominated by why I don't like the other side as opposed to, why I like my side. And, of course, this has been coming for some time. Donald Trump did not create this phenomenon. I'm not saying that. The dysfunction in our politics was a pre-existing condition. But what I've never seen before is this the often unquestioning loyalty to the person. We didn't have that when Ronald Reagan was the president, when George Bush was the president. You didn't have this cultic personality where if you disagreed with them somehow – you were excommunicated. I thought it was amazing. You asked about the Republican convention. I thought it was really remarkable that the convention voted to not have a new platform, that basically what the party said was whatever Donald Trump is in favor of, we are in favor of. This is a political party that used to pride itself on having ideas and ideology and proposals and policies. And essentially they said, yeah, we're just with that guy. That's I think historians are going to look back on that as a really telling moment in what has happened to the Republican Party.
We're talking with Charlie Sykes, the founder of The Bulwark, the host of The Bulwark podcast, talking about the GOP and the state of our country's conservatives, with your insights at 800-642-1234. We heard from Timothy, sent us an email saying, I see certain similarities between how President Trump approaches governing as president and how Scott Walker and the Republican majority have governed in Wisconsin. And Timothy is asking, how do you assess recent Republican leadership in Wisconsin with the benefit of hindsight, and what advice would you give the majority leadership in the state now?
Well, that's a complicated question because, of course, people will remember that I was a supporter back in the day. But that was also back when Scott Walker was an open critic of Trump and Trumpism. I think that one of the things that's happened, and I do give a lot of thought to the way in which we became hyper-polarized in Wisconsin, the way it really became us versus them, and whether or not when I was on the radio, I contributed to that. And I'm willing to acknowledge that I did. And once you become hyper-polarized, you become less focused on solving problems and getting things done than in just simply beating the other guy. And I think that's one of the moments we're at in politics where we almost don't expect government to solve problems or to deal with the issues in front of us, because it's all been about point scoring. And I think that in some ways we modeled that behavior. I would point out, though, that one of the things that's been hard for me to get my head around is watching the Trumpification of the Republican Party in Wisconsin, because I had been under the impression that we, in fact, were different, that you know, we were the party of Paul Ryan. We were the party of reformers. And suddenly we've become the party of Donald Trump. And so, you know, the switch here in Wisconsin has been about as dramatic as it has been elsewhere. Although I take the writer's point that the hyper partisanship and the we have the majority and we're going to ram things through mentality probably is not as far off as I might like to think.
Charlie, what effect do you think conservative media like Fox News, like Breitbart, Rush Limbaugh, what have they had on the Republican Party?
A dramatic effect. It's really impossible to overstate it. In fact, what they have done is they have created an alternative reality. It's not just that there's an echo chamber. It's an alternative reality silo. And I think that you need to understand, you need to see almost everything that happens in American politics through the lens of understanding that one part of America, maybe 40% of America, has an entirely different narrative. They hear different stories. They have different personalities that they follow. They have different talking points. We could be in an era where we have the most dramatic developments and investigative reporting, but it won't penetrate through to much of the electorate because of this alternative reality. And this is something I've written about, because it is part of being part of conservative talk radio. I really thought we were sort of the other part of the story. We were the counterpoint, but we morphed into something I think much more toxic. You know, for example, the story that's playing out about the president's regarding people who had volunteered for the Vietnam War, or members of the military, as losers and suckers. This has been actually confirmed. This story has been confirmed by many news outlets, including a very respected reporter at Fox News. But if you're watching Fox News, you will see tremendous effort to discredit that story and actually discredit their own reporting of the story. So this gives you an idea of how different the worldview is depending on which media outlet you listen to or watch.
Well, speaking of media outlets, let's bring in Ryan in DeSoto with thoughts on this. Hi, Ryan.
Good morning. So first, I would just like to say that, I consider myself a swing voter, and so I typically vote on the policies that I agree with. In this case, it ties into my point where it's not just the policies, it's the person this year as well. Following that, I've always kind of said, yeah, all politicians lie in some way, shape, or form. But no politician has ever had a lie tracker made for them. And don't quote me on this, but I'm relatively sure that I found it at the Washington Post, where since 2016, Trump has already told 23,000 approximately lies. That have been fact-checked and either proven false. So that was just my thought on the whole situation.
Ryan, thanks. Charlie, do these trackers matter?
I would like to think they do matter, but I'm not sure, because I think that we're in a state, and this really goes to the question of how we've changed our politics here. You do have a portion of Americans who will believe anything that Donald Trump says, despite the documentation of his lies and how often he lies.
But you also have, I think, a larger group of Americans who may know that the president is not telling the truth, but no longer care. And that troubles me the most, that, you know, politicians who lie are not new. We've never had a politician who lied quite as much as Donald Trump. But also we have this phenomenon of people knowing that it may not be true, but not caring. This is what people like Garry Kasparov, the former world chess champion and Russian dissident, describes as the annihilation of truth. That the point is not to make you to believe the lie. It's making you doubt your critical sensibilities. So you just shrug and you go, I don't know who to believe. I don't know what is truth. And that's a dangerous place for a democracy.
Charlie, very quickly, in a couple seconds, what will you do in November with your ballot?
Well, I've said that I'm going to be voting for Joe Biden because, quite frankly, I just think we have to end this particular segment of American history. So I'm primarily voting against Donald Trump. I think we need to move back to some sort of a normal politics. And once we do that, I'm going to look forward to being not necessarily supportive of everything he does.
We got to go here.
Putting an end to this. Yes.
Charlie, thanks on the Ideas Network. Yeah.